You're listening to West Virginia Morning. I'm John Cantese. State senators have made changes to a bill that, as approved by the House, would repeal the state's Common Core education standards and align standardized tests. Ashton Morrow reports.
Senators on the Education Committee accepted amendments to the bill during an evening meeting Monday. As approved by the committee, the bill still requires a repeal of Common Core-based education standards, but those standards were repealed by the State Board of Education in December and replaced with the West Virginia College and Career Ready standards. The bill requires the Senate President and House Speaker appoint a commission to review the current standards and suggest changes to the state board. That commission would be made up of content experts in the field of English, math, and science, and would be overseen by the Chancellor of the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission. Senators also included an amendment that would keep the current science standards in place, allowing them to take effect in July of this year, but would make those standards subject to the review of the commission. It also removes the provision to allow students to opt out or refuse to take standardized tests. The bill will be reported to the full Senate today and could be up for a vote by Friday. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
The West Virginia University Institute of Technology has been given the legislative go-ahead to move its campus out of Montgomery to Beckley and the former campus of Mountain State University. As Dave Mistage reports, senators approved a bill yesterday allowing for relocation.
Senators voted 22-12 Monday to allow WVU Tech to move from Montgomery, where it's been located for 120 years. The move comes as a result of a vote from the West Virginia University Board of Governors back in August. The board says the infrastructure on the Montgomery campus is in disrepair, and the school is struggling financially to stay open after continuous losses of enrollment. Senator Greg Boso from Nicholas County is a Tech graduate who supported the move.
It hurts me to know what my legislature has done to my college. We've not increased any funding to West Virginia Tech. The West Virginia Tech's study said you got to put some money into us to allow us to survive, to allow us to, rather than just surviving, to thrive. We didn't do it. From what I've seen thus to date, if we don't pass this legislation right here, right now, by pushing the green button, in about a year from now, maybe two, we're going to be passing legislation that completely obliterates. Why? Because they can't survive.
Senator Jeff Mullins, who lives in Beckley and represents the district that will soon house the university, also spoke in favor of the bill. Mullins says the move will allow Tech to collaborate with other higher ed institutions in the area, like New River Community College, Concord University, and Bluefield State. But Senator Bill Laird issued a word of warning to those institutions. Laird says the move to Beckley will increase competition for students and tuition dollars. In addition, Laird says moving the campus will economically devastate the community of Montgomery, which is made up of just 1,700 residents.
It's a bill that should make all of us very sad for the history of a fine school. It's a bill that should make all of us very sad for the history of a town. It should make all of us very sad for a region of this state.
That's Senator Ron Miller, who also represents the district Tech will soon leave. Miller joined Laird in speaking against the legislation.
The outcome of this legislation, if it passes, is in some ways the story of what's taking place in all of southern West Virginia. By passing this bill, we are saying that we have forgotten the roles played by regions, particularly in the South, to create what was once a great economic engine for the state of West Virginia. Passage of this bill is powerfully saying that the contributions of those folks of yesterday mean nothing to us today. It becomes a story of not what have you done for us historically, but what are you doing for us now?
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Charleston.
A poll released last month of likely West Virginia voters found only 38% of them support moving alcohol sales from 1 p.m. on Sundays to 10 a.m. But that wasn't the story at a public hearing in the House Monday. Rob Engel has more.
The brunch bill, as it's been referred to for years, was called an economic development measure, a bill that would support small businesses across the state while bringing in more tax revenues. Members of the public spoke unanimously in favor of Senate Bill 298, including Mark Cherry, general manager at the Embassy Suites Hotel in Charleston, who argued the brunch bill was not necessarily a pro-alcohol bill as much as it was a pro-business bill.
And I know that we'll generate a significant amount of revenue. I know that we'll need to put on an extra person. person or two. I know that if we have a 100-person brunch on a Sunday morning, that we're going to need two or three extra employees plus a bartender. I know that that is replicated throughout all of the hotels and conference centers that are surrounding this state. This hotel, you know, my hotel may be small fry compared to the Greenbrier. The money that those guys are leaving on the table right now is astronomical.
House Speaker Tim Armstead had previously said the bill was not a priority this session, but the Judiciary Committee had placed the bill on its agenda Monday. Similar versions of the brunch bill were introduced in the 2013, 2014, and 2015 legislative sessions, but each year the bill has failed simply because it was not a priority for either the Democratic or Republican leadership. The bill was approved unanimously in the Senate. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Rob Engel in Charleston.
The House Judiciary Committee voted late last night to advance the brunch bill to the full House for further consideration after making its way through the committee process. The bill now includes a referendum provision allowing county commissioners to put the 10 a.m. sale start time on the ballot for voter approval. The bill could be up for a vote in the chamber by Friday. You're listening to West Virginia Morning at 7:50. Today's going to be mostly sunny with highs in the 70s. And tonight it's going to get a little cloudier with lows in the 40s and low 50s.
Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. And by State Electric Supply Company, providing electrical solutions to West Virginia since 1952. Online at stateelectric.com.
HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the United States. It's so common that almost all sexually active men and women will get it at some point in their lives. HPV is preventable, but as Carol often reports, vaccination rates are low nationwide, with some particularly troubling statistics coming out of West Virginia.
Shelley Dusick found out she had cervical cancer 2 weeks after she got married. She was 22.
And I was probably the most grateful person to find out that I had cancer that you have ever seen. Because for the 6 years prior to that, I had been told by four doctors that I'd never lived to see 30, that they didn't know what was wrong with me, been through seven diagnostic surgeries, and we didn't know what was wrong.
Her first symptoms, irregular heavy periods, debilitating pain in her right side, started when she was about 16. She had a hysterectomy soon after learning about the cervical cancer. Dusick was quick to point out that her case was not normal. The average age of cervical cancer diagnosis in the United States is 48.
But being exposed to the virus that causes cervical cancer in your teens or in your 20s is very common.
HPV viruses, there are more than 100 related strains, cause almost all cases of cervical and anal cancers, according to the National Cancer Institute. HPV can also cause other cancers, including cancer of the mid-throat.
We need to get the word out that we have a vaccine that can prevent cancer.
That's Catherine Moffitt, head of pediatric infectious diseases at West Virginia University School of Medicine.
Giving the HPV vaccine is not about giving your child permission to be sexually active. Those are very important conversations. To talk to your kid and making good choices and waiting on things and being monogamous, those are all really important things. It's about prevention. So you give it before anybody is even remotely considering doing anything. Give it at 11 and 12 when they get a really brisk response and they get a response to all of the serotypes in the vaccine. Then you are protected.
Moffitt says millions of doses of the vaccine have been given in the 10 years since the vaccine was approved, but that West Virginia continues to experience low vaccination rates. There are no known serious side effects to the vaccine.
Unfortunately, we are number one in HPV-related cervical cancer deaths, and number four in HPV-related infections in the United States. That's bad.
Part of West Virginia's high cervical cancer rates may be due to other risk factors. Smoking, for instance, increases the risk of cervical cancer, as does poverty and being overweight, according to the American Cancer Society. Shelley Dusick was diagnosed with cervical cancer in 2002, 4 years before the first vaccine came out.
The day that the FDA approved the vaccine for HPV, I bawled like a baby. Because for the first time, there was hope that no other woman would have to go through what I went through. And no one should.
According to the CDC, about 79 million Americans are currently infected with HPV. About 14 million people become newly infected each year. There is no cure. Dusick is now 36 and hasn't been sick since her surgery. She loves being well, but says she still has trouble walking through the aisles of Walmart and passing the baby section.
And I think about the things that vaccine could have saved. It would be worth it.
Dusick is now a health information specialist for the West Virginia Breast and Cervical Cancer Screening Program, which has been partnering with the West Virginia Immunization Network to try and increase HPV vaccination rates in Appalachia. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with support from the Benedum Foundation.
Ex-Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship is opposing a prosecution push to make him pay $28 million in restitution to a coal company. In a Beckley federal court filing on Monday, Blankenship's attorneys said he shouldn't have to pay Alpha Natural Resources legal fees, investigative expenses, and fines. Blankenship was convicted December 3rd of a misdemeanor conspiracy to willfully violate mine safety standards at Upper Big Branch Mine, the southern West Virginia coal mine, which exploded in April 2010, killing 29 men. Alpha bought Massey in 2011. Blankenship's attorneys wrote that now bankrupt Alpha viewed the explosion and investigations as an opportunity to buy Massey at a lower price. Alpha declined to comment yesterday. Blankenship's attorneys said restitution isn't an option and would complicate and prolong his sentencing, now slated for April 6th, in 2016. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all of the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. And we are interested in your comments, so make sure you send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. And I'm John Cantese. Have a good morning.